Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to listen to. And joining me today is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to be talking about Altered Carbon today. And we're going to be talking about both the book and the TV, the Netflix series. It's not really a TV series, is it? But it is a television program produced by Netflix, but you can't watch it on TV unless you've got like a thing to plug into your TV streaming. Anyway, Netflix streaming show. The reason we're reviewing this is because of it's a new show, it's just come out. I've reviewed this book before on my podcast. So if you want to, if you want a review which is concentrating purely on the book, you can go back to, why do I always do this? Every time I'm like,
43?
Yeah, something like that. Episode 43. So back in like 2008 or 2010, let's have a quick look here. Altered Carbon, yes.
42.
Episode 42, pretty good. So back in 2009, I read and reviewed this. So go back if you just want something purely about the book. We will talk about the book, of course, and we'll be talking about the TV show. We're keen to keep it spoiler-free. But first of all, what do you think, Juliana, of the book? Just sort of like, should people go away and watch the TV show? Or should people go away and read the book and then come back and listen to the rest of this podcast? Which would you suggest?
Well, I enjoyed the TV series more than the book.
Yeah.
So I would say go watch the Netflix series.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's 10 episodes, about an hour each on average. So go check it out. Yeah?
Yeah.
I think it's worth it. I would agree mostly to a point. You know, mostly. Put it this way. Altered Carbon is it says here, mass market paperback on Goodreads. It says 526 pages, first published in 2002. So we're going back like
quite a while. By the way, it was written by Richard K. Morgan.
Yes, Richard K. Morgan. Well, because we're going to be talking about the TV show as well. But
consulting.
Oh, yes, that is true. He was one of the producers. Maybe not producers. Anyway, obviously a story consultant and things like that on it. So Richard K. Morgan, Altered Carbon, or Richard Morgan. It depends. In America, he's Richard K. Morgan, but I think maybe there was other Richard Morgans that he couldn't use that name
and
so much in college.
And he came out in 2002.
The original book, 2002. And so, it is a book which is about 100 pages too long. Or if you do what I did, which is listen to the audiobook, it's about an hour and a half, 2 hours too long. And unfortunately, a lot of the pacing issues in the book are in that like last section, like that last third, the last, you know, the last quarter of it. It kind of bogs down and gets slowed down a bit. You know, we'll talk about some of those issues later on. But yeah, I think this is one of the few times where I would say the TV show is better than the book. Not that it's a better story than is in the book. And I actually like a lot of the things in the book better than the TV show. But I think overall the TV show has got a better payoff for the time that you're going to spend with it, you know.
Yeah, and I think for me it explained things a lot. I had just a clearer picture of the whole thing in front of me. Like the book was sometimes a bit too.
Well, I think this is the thing. So anyway, we're not gonna do any spoilers. We're just gonna talk about like what we like about these different things. And so just even if you've not watched it or read it or anything, we'll just carry on for a while. But I do understand what you mean. One of the main differences between the book and the TV show is that the book, I think, has a lot more roots. Its roots are much more in the noir style of like, hey, I'm a detective and I'm going out and about on the town. And there's this rich person who comes to me, and then there's the femme fatale who is there, you know, the woman who uses her good looks and her sex appeal to try and get her way. And then the cops, and some of the cops are crooked, and all these different kinds, and there's the underworld people and all of that sorting through the tales of passion, which is very noir-like. That is very much what the book feels like. However, the TV show is like, oh no, we're just doing Blade Runner, Ghost in the Shell. That's it. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of the noirness, but a lot of the influences on the book, which make it very noirish, And I mean, it's still cyber, you know, it's still full on cyberpunk in the book, but in the TV show, they really lean into the cyberpunk and they take away a lot more of the noir style of like, okay, it's first person narrator by the main detective and everything is told from his point of view. In the story, in the TV show, they widen out the story and say, this character over here, they're actually going to have a character arc of their own and they're going to have a story of their own and a character of their own, much more so than the book.
Yes, I think that actually helps the book and the story. Story a lot to have not only this one focus.
You mean it helps the TV show?
It helps the TV show. Yeah, yeah, I mean it helps the story in the TV show to get just a bit more. I don't know. You have more like you.
There's more to latch onto. Yeah, it's not just like what is this guy going to do? Is he going to survive? What's going to happen to him? And everything. In fact, he even mentions this in the TV show quite a bit. Sort of like going, oh, the people who you meet, you know, get a group, a team around you, and they're expendable, but you're not. The mission's not expendable, but the people around you are expendable. And in the book, you can go, oh yeah, they did feel pretty expendable, except for Ortega, who is like the second main character. Whereas in the TV show, you think, oh, this is just as much Ortega's story as it is Takeshi Kovacs.
Yeah, and also it's a bit more about the team thing.
Yes.
It's more about they keep repeating it, the pack thing. But I think that makes some better points than it does in the book. In a book, it feels more like a lone wolf.
Yes, it very is a lone wolf. And unfortunately, as I'm saying, if it was the story that was in the TV show, which was filling up the book, I would say it wouldn't be too long and there wouldn't be pacing issues because you'd have to fit all that stuff in there.
Yeah.
Whereas in the TV show, it all fits. I do think there is a bit of pacing issue in the last two episodes, but like it does slow down a bit and it spends a bit too long doing the big dunamon and climax and reveals and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I thought in the book it was worse.
Well, the point is, I read the book first and then I watched a TV show, so I already knew what the kind of the basic storyline was going to be and how it was going to resolve, and I was just waiting for it to get there, whereas you hadn't seen that before in the TV show.
I actually had an interesting way of consuming it.
Yeah, you started the book.
I started the book, then I got about...
What happened? We watched like the first episode of...
We started watching it. Yeah, we watched 20 minutes or so.
You watched 20 minutes at the start of the show, and then I said, oh, no, it's probably best to, you know, read the book first, but you were struggling with the book, and I was like, oh, just watch the TV show.
Yeah, I got about three quarters in the book, and then I thought, it's really...
And then you watch the TV show.
And then I watch the TV show, and then I kind of like got the hang on it.
Yeah, like, and then you're like, let's go back to the book to see how it ends.
Yes, and to just see the differences.
Yeah, so... I mean, there's lots of differences between the... I don't know whether the book's better or the TV show's better or something like that, because it does get a bit insufferable in that way. But the basic setup is, and I let me put the setting. The setting is mostly, you know, San Francisco or Bay City, as it's called, hundreds of years in the future. Now, in the book, it seems very clear that this is sort of like a post-progress world. In other words, progress has stopped. Technological progress has stopped in many ways. They have all this thing, and there's even a sequence in the book, like there's a scene in a chapter in the, or part of the book where Bancroft, who is the main, he's the guy who has been, he's killed himself, and now he needs to know why he's killed himself. If you don't understand how he's killed himself and he's yet wondering how he killed himself, you watch the TV show. But anyway, it's said. But he pretty much says all of the interesting people, all the people with drive, all the people who have things to do and contribute, they all left Earth and went out to the stars. And they're all, you know, they're colonizing the planets and they've all gone. And we're just all the people left back on Earth, the kind of the boring conservative people who are just happy to hang out and not really progress very much. Which meant that in the book, I found the setting to be like San Francisco, but a bit more modern, but some of the buildings, but you know, just like a basic city, kind of as we'd recognize it now. Of course, some more tall buildings, you know,
and
whatever. And some flying cars and stuff like that. But generally, like a city as recognizable now. Whereas in the TV show, they're just like, now we're just going to go Blade Runner. It's going to be tall buildings, it's going to be all neon, it's all going to be crazy stuff like that. Which I found interesting, and I didn't mind it because even though it did look a bit cheesy, you can see they have spent a lot of money on that TV show.
Yes.
A lot of those special effects are very, very good. However, it felt like the city was actually smaller than it looked, because they went to the top of the, there was the the Bancroft resident, which is on the very, 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 very top floor
of a very, very tall building,
tall building, and a kilometer high tall building that was up above the clouds, 2 kilometers high, up above the clouds, or whatever. So they're like really high up. And then you have like Ortega's apartment, which is sort of like downstairs in an old church, or it's the police station, which is an old church. And that kind of thing, and a few bars, and that's it. You didn't, like, the height of the city, which is in the special effects, isn't reflected in the TV show. Everything is ground level or 2 kilometers high up a building, and there's not any... It didn't actually feel like I was in a big city. It felt like quite a small city. Or it felt like a city about the same size, not a mega, mega, megalopolis, as it seemed to be in the special effects
shot. One of the characters... In the book or something, lives outside of the city. And
yeah, they live up in Oregon or Northern California somewhere.
Oakland?
No, they go
whatever. Like in the book, the whole story also takes place a little bit more on the outskirts somehow.
In this case, there's actually a scene in the book which happens halfway across the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's kind of implied in the book that... There's never any reason to drive across the Golden Gate Bridge now, because there's not a lot up to the north, and if you do, you just get an air car and fly directly there. You don't drive up the road to get there. Whereas in the TV show, the Golden Gate Bridge it's now just this big container park, but all the containers are people living in them, so it's all this
like big stacks of...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like in Ready Player One, where you see the stacks, everyone just stack it. It's sort of like, oh, let's just do the stacks, but on the Golden Gate Bridge, which is great. It's a really good, fun look. It's iconic there. Yeah. But I never really got the reason why, like, if you actually had that... If Bay City did completely encompass the bay, and, like, the buildings were spreading across the bridges, there's, like... Billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of people there, but it didn't feel like a city of billions. It felt like a city of, you know, like San Francisco now, like about a million, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't like that. I mean, there were some of those...
Not billions of people live there. But it would be the biggest city in the world,
But some of those shots, you had some of those typical, like, Blade Runner shots, you know, a dark city with skyscrapers, raining, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And
then
neon signs and hollows stuff. But even there, it didn't feel like crowded.
Yeah. Another few things which really kind of didn't rub me up the wrong way, but like at the end, well, not at the end, but there's this whole, there's a location called Head in the Clouds. And in the book, that is a brothel, a high-end brothel, what they call the houses. It's one of the houses.
Yes.
It's like the super high-end brothel. And it was built on an old weather airship, a Zeppelin kind of thing, which was kind of out, far enough out into the, above the ocean, like out in international waters. And I always felt it was like international waters out there. Mm. And, you know, it's a plot point that it's Head in the Clouds in here. And in the TV show, they're like, Head in the Clouds, and it's just on like a flying spaceship. And it didn't seem to be any reason for it to be on a flying spaceship, because it wasn't in international waters. It wasn't in, you know, it seemed to me to miss the point of why the Head in the Clouds was in a flying spaceship, or in the TV show, or in an airship in the book. Like, it seemed to be very clear. So I'm just saying, some of the images, they're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool? Like, in the book, it's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if the brothel is on an airship flying out at sea, you know, above international waters out at sea. And there seemed to be a reason for it, whereas in the book, in the TV show, a lot of the, like, scene setting, world building, it didn't seem to be, there didn't seem to be any reason for it, except it looks cool and cyberpunkish.
I didn't need a reason for that.
No?
No. I mean, I saw this before, I read this in the book.
Yeah.
And I think...
You just went with it anyway.
I think it was just a totally valid thing that you would have a high-end brothel, not just on the ground, where there's too many people anyway and too crowded, whatever. But you have it just there. You know, like one in... I don't know, it reminded me a bit of, you know, one of those motels out in nowhere.
It's definitely a Vegas style to it.
So... I didn't need the backstory. I thought it was sufficiently...
Yes, I'm just saying that after some of the world building being very, very clear in in the book, some of it was kind of let down, though, just like, oh, it looks cool, oh, it's cyberpunk, it looks cyberpunkish. Mm. Anyway, we recently watched, or tried to watch, the latest Ghost in the Shell remake slash reboot, whatever live action thing.
Yeah, how long did we get? Half an hour?
Yeah, we got about half an hour into it, and it was awful. It was way worse racism-wise than we were expecting, and, you know, whitewashing-wise. But also, it looked really, like, after watching the latest Blade Runner, even though I have issues with both Blade Runner movies, there's nothing, you can't say anything wrong about the look of it and the world building in it. It is amazing. Whereas in the you know, this Ghost in the Shell was like kind of pathetic. And this was, and this TV show, Altered Carbon, it looked kind of almost better than the Ghost in the Shell movie.
Oh, yeah,
like,
it does.
Because there it was like all too clean. It's sort of like, it wasn't grungy enough in many ways to make it look real and lived in. It was because this was a TV show and you got to know the city a bit more slowly. There were those big glamour shots of the city as you were like flying in at the start, and that looked actually the cheapest the city looked. Later on, once you got used to it, it looks a bit better.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and some of the alleyways.
Alleyways.
I mean, it felt a bit like, okay, this is the set.
Yeah, this
and we go back to the same set.
That's what I'm saying. They kept on going back to like these three. That there was this doorway, and then there was the entrance to the hotel, and then there was this little alleyway where somebody was found, and that's it. That's all you ever saw of the city.
Yeah.
Whereas in the wide angle things, and they draw it back and you see the big expanse of the city. There's towers here and bridges between the towers, and it seems all this multi-level stuff, and it's sort of like, no, we go to the top of the building or the very bottom of the building, and it never really felt like there was any there was nothing in between.
Yes.
Like, we never saw anything in between.
Yes.
Anyway, so the setup of the book is that Altered Carbon is, everyone has this thing in the back of their head which records their consciousness, and it can be taken out and put into other bodies. So it's all bearing, your body is a sleeve.
The stack.
Yeah, the stack is in your head, and then you have different sleeves. And the idea being that you can transmit your personality between solar systems, but also it's just sort of like a backup thing. The idea being that you can have a spare body if you're very, very rich, you can grow clones and put your stack into another spare body and all that kind of stuff, and transmit your consciousness between different bodies. And the setup is a very rich man. All the evidence seems to show that he killed himself, and he's
super
like
old. 300 years old.
Yeah, he's like 300 years old. Lawrence Bancroft, and he's sort of like, why would I have ever killed... Oh, yeah, and then he gets his backup, and he resleeves his backup, and was like,
so it's like,
why...
like a certain automatic backup plan.
Yeah, he's sort of like, why did anybody kill me? And everyone's like, no, nobody killed you. You committed suicide. And he's like, no, somebody killed me. And he hires in our main guy, our main private investigator, who was an envoy, which we'll talk about in a minute, but they bring him over from different planets. He's been on different planets anyway. They bring him over from Harlan's world. It's his first time on Earth, and he comes out, and he's been cast over, and he's been in prison for a while. Prison means you just kind of turn off your brain and
for give 150 years,
yeah, something like that. Yeah. In the book, it's been like 30 years or something. It's not very long since he's gone off. In the TV show, it's sort of like, 250 years you've been in the stack, and then he comes out.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a difference there. But yeah, so he comes out, and he's going around and beating people up and shooting people and punching people to try and get to the bottom of who killed this person, or if he killed himself, why did he kill himself?
Yeah.
And his name is Takashi Kovach. Now, in the book, it's just explained that there was this planet which was mostly Japanese people funded it, and then they brought over these Slavic people as the kind of slave labor. In the TV show, they mixed it up a bit. It's sort of like, oh yeah, there's, you know, he had a Slavic white father and a Japanese mother, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So like they mixed it round a bit there as well to it works better in the TV show, I think, for that. So he's brought over. And in the book, most of what we see is of him is sort of like, oh, there's a bit of run-ins with the... You know, in his past, in the backstory that we get, there's a bit of run-ins with the triads, the Japanese gangs and things like that, that he ran with them. And then he joined up to the official army. And then he left that official army and became part of the resistance.
Yeah.
And then was, you know, killed by the end of that, and then comes back later. And it feels very much like, especially in the book, it feels a bit like the TV show Firefly, where there's the Redcoats. Is it the Redcoats? Or yeah. What's Mal and those guys? It starts off them...
Browncoats.
Yeah, oh, is it your Browncoats? Yeah, yeah, Browncoats, that's it. Redcoats are something else. So the Browncoats, they start off, and it starts by them losing the war.
Yeah.
And then it goes, and now 3 years after this resistance failed, all the people who were fighting there, we've got to put it back together, and there's still a lot of lingering resentment. And it feels very much like that in the book, that everybody knows who the Quellists were, and it's sort of like, oh, you're still a Quellist, there's lots of people around. But in the TV show, the Quellists were 250 years in the past, and had this kind of historical, and the envoys who were fighting for the Quellists, they were kind of this historical little quirk. What do you think about the difference between those? Did you notice the...
First of all, I must admit that the whole backstory in the book got totally lost on me. And that was probably also why I partly like kind of lost...
Lost interest in it.
When I watched the TV show, it was a lot clearer what was the backstory about. Now,
yes.
I don't think it was all like completely lined up with what happens in the book.
No,
but
it's very different.
I still have not figured out
what's
in the book.
This is the thing that I find very interesting, is that in the book, all of the stuff that the envoys can do or could do and all the things that the Quellists did was kind of only just referenced in passing.
Yeah.
It is actually covered more in later books and things like that.
This is part of a series.
Yeah, it's part of a series. But it was the first book, but it was very much written that, oh, there's more to come. Okay.
But I get it from the book that they were way more like... trained to influence the opinion of somebody, right? It was more of a mind trick.
And the thing that I found most unsatisfying about the TV show, knowing the book, is that the envoys were like these badass. Everyone knew that the envoys, like you say, oh, I have envoy training. In the TV show, he's the last envoy. He was the only one to survive, and they brought him back. And everyone's like, ooh, the last envoy. In the book, it's sort of like the envoys turn up, and everyone's like, oh, shit, an envoy. I'm going to stay away from this guy. Like, just saying, I'm a trained envoy when he's being, tortured or, questioned in the book is enough for people to just go, oh, shit, right, this guy is a big deal. Like, in
really?
The... Yeah.
That didn't get across to me like that.
No, it is. When he's being tortured in the book, one of the ways, one of the ways that it comes out, they're like, oh, like, if you're an envoy and someone has brought an envoy to Earth and employed them, that's way above our pay grade. But they know how big it is. Whereas in the TV show, it's a curiosity.
I actually thought it came across in the TV series really well.
What?
The way that they managed to get him out of the holding of the army, and the way that they got him out of virtual torturing stuff. That to me was way more impressive than happened in the
my
book.
My point is, it's not that what he does. I think in what he does in the book, in the current timeline, and in the TV show in the current timeline, what I'm saying is what we find about the past of the envoys, I like it in the book that it's much more mysterious, that everyone is just like, envoys, oh shit. Like the what they did in the past was kind of... is kind of brought through by how people react to it in the current world.
Yeah.
And like, oh, we were envoys and we were sent here and we just kicked ass everywhere like that. In the TV show, we get lots of flashbacks of the envoy training, but it's just people, it's like, oh, these are like Ewoks hanging out in the woods.
Yeah, that was...
And then they go, and now we're going to go on a mission, and we see them go on a mission, and they just, they download their minds into another place, because that's the whole point of envoys, is that they can travel around and be amazing soldiers even in other people's bodies, because it's all in the mind. They don't need their physical training, they just have their mind training and can do all of that. And then they come back and they've had the envoy conditioning, so they can swap between different bodies without going crazy, all that different kind of stuff. And in the book, it feels like, oh man, these guys are amazing. And in the TV show, when we actually see who the envoys are, there was like, it's the last envoy. And I was like, but this was a group of like 20 people 250 years ago. How are these, like, how does anybody know about them?
Yes.
You know?
I stumbled across this like, oh, they are hanging out in the woods, bit like Robin Hood type of people. That also diminished it for me. But the whole, okay, what actually happened to these people got a lot clearer in the TV show than it got for me in the book.
Yes, because I think they wanted to fill in the backstory to have a story arc of Quellquist, whatever her name is, the leader of the Quellists. And
also that I never really got from the book, There were so many names. I have no idea who now actually the leader. Yes. Was it Sarah or Virginia?
No, the Quell. I can't remember. But
the thing is, that's never clear.
In the later books, in the third book, it's a lot more about, oh, let's go back to the Harlan's world where the Quellish Rebellion is taking, you know, all that kind of stuff. It covers that a bit more.
Okay.
Like in the TV show, it kind of ends with like, oh, there's this Quell person. Let's go find her. That's pretty much what the TV show lets, and that's kind of what happens in the third book. You know, that's the kind of mission that he's going on, is to reconnect with his Quellist past.
Okay.
In the book, the Quellists seem to be very much like in the style, and I mentioned this on the SFF audio podcast that we did about this, is that there is a good like tradition of lefty political view authors who write science fiction. Mm-hmm. People like, you know, Douglas Adams and I can't remember the names that I listed off, but there's lots of these different people who have kind of like different, like more lefty kind of like, you know, the young Trotskys when they were, you know, all that kind of thing. And they're like, oh, okay, so we're all communists here. And the Quellist seems to be like, I was fighting for the Quellist, which was
we share everything,
do all that kind of stuff, which I really quite like the political message in that, because he's like, no, I'm going to stick it to the rich people because Bancroft is very rich and he's very powerful, so I'm going to stick it to him. And it's all about, you know, tearing down, eating the rich and, you know, and spreading, you know, Robin Hood stuff, spreading it among the poor. In the TV show, they take the Quellists in a different direction to say, we are against longevity. Everybody over 100 years old is going to lose the ability to, you know,
Be human.
Yeah, not to be human. Yeah, if they live that long, but like once they get past 100 years, the stack fails. So it's sort of like everyone gets 100 years and that means everyone is equal. And for me, that felt really disappointing because the whole point of this world is that isn't everyone happy that they can be immortal? Of course, the rich people have true immortality and nobody else can afford it. But it felt to me like, oh, if you really work hard, you can afford a sleeve and you get put into the sleeve. It's just like, how much are you always going to be saving up for the new sleeve when you're working in your current sleeve? It's sort of like a bit of a drag. And it's sort of like, yeah, after two lifetimes, people just go, that's a bit much now. And then they keep being woken up and they're like, actually, this time, don't wake me up again. This will be the last time you wake me up.
And in the book, there's also this the group of people, the Catholics. Right?
Yeah.
So they don't want to be getting a new sleeve. What I think is the biggest problem about the sleeving thing is that you can use your body.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds a bit weird because if you live in a society like that, your body probably doesn't mean that much because, it's just a body. But still, like, you can wake up in a different thing because somebody else, a richer person, bought off your body.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of...
Yeah, but the point is that in the book, it seemed to me, again, it's not entirely clear just from the words of the book, but it seemed to be that the political thrust of Quellist isn't no to long life and no to the stacks and no to the resleeving. It's no to the people who are rich enough just to run roughshod over the people, us little people. You know, it feels very politically current in the way of like massive wealth.
Because if you live, inequality. If you just keep living in your same, there is no interruption.
Again, what I'm trying to get at is that the Quellist weren't against long life. They were against the accumulation of extreme wealth and wealth inequality. And so, in the book, they say, oh, you Quellists are terrorists. But it always felt like that they weren't terrorists. They were just on the losing side of a war. So then they're called terrorists. Hmm. In the TV show, they were terrorists. They were a terror unit. They were causing terror. They were doing, you know, using violence for political gains, which wasn't to do with the politics of wealth inequality. It was sort of like the way that we're going to fix wealth inequality is to make sure everyone dies at 100 years old. And for me, that felt like it diminished who the Quellists were. Mm. It felt like a serious political movement, which happened to fail in a war in the book, whereas in the TV show, it felt so trivial and pathetic. The envoys didn't feel important because in the book it feels like the envoys were like these, like there was all these different troops and then there was the crack troops and it was the envoys who were the most important. They could go into different places and do all this crazy stuff. Whereas in the TV show, it's sort of like, oh yeah, there's some guys in the woods who are running around playing soldier. And it just didn't feel important, you know, in that way. I like the look of it, you know, and I like the set and I like the actors and I like the story. But I was just a bit disappointed. Like, in the book, the envoys are just like, oh, shit, envoys. And in the TV show, it's sort of like, oh, yeah, I remember the envoys. Who remembers the envoys? Yeah, it felt a bit more like, oh, you remember the... I don't know, like, what, some weird group 250 years ago, who, if they came into the modern world, would you be scared of any soldier from 250 years ago? No. But some crack commando from the Vietnam War, you're like, oh shit, we're in the, you know, we're in the jungle and fucking Rambo is turning up. You know, there is a different way of looking at it, sort of like current super soldiers versus like a small terrorist group from 250 years ago. If there was a little bit of a mismatch there.
Okay, it wasn't for me.
Okay, it was just one thing that, I know, but I'm just saying, for me, that was a big thing. Like, it felt like the Quellists were a serious political movement in the book. And in the TV show, a mild nuisance with misguided ideals.
Sure.
Because, okay, here's a question. If you, which side of the war would you be on? Everyone lives to 100 and then dies, or everyone can live as long as they wanted to, if they can afford to be, you know, backed up, or if they can get into a new sleeve and all that kind of stuff? Which one would you prefer?
Well... But that doesn't have anything to do with it.
It does. It does.
Why?
Because are you... what kind of Quellist are you? Are you a Quellist in the book? Or what do you think is more important? The Quellist in the book, where it's about redistribution of wealth and kind of a bit more lefty, socialist kind of values? Well, is it...
It kind of combines it. Because if you only live until 100 years, you can't... accumulate that kind of wealth.
No, the point is, you can.
No, you cannot.
No, you can. You just leave it to your children. That's what the world that we're in at the moment. We have got the highest... in the UK and in America, it's literally the highest ever wealth inequality. The richest people are the richest people who have ever lived in the world ever, now live. Compared to, you know, the average wealth and the, you know, all the different ways that you say... Like, one family of... Walmart family, the heirs of the Walmart family together own as much, they have as much money as the bottom, like, 35-40% of all people in America. And that's not the people who earned the money, that's not people who ran the company, and that's not the people, just the people who are inheriting it.
Yes.
So the whole idea of saying, oh, killing everyone or making sure nobody lives past 100, it feels so naive to think that that's the way to wealth equality, or, you know, bringing equality to better equality and better services and all the things that come with, like, not having people living in poverty.
Yeah.
Just to say, oh, everyone has to die at 100. It feels like a waste of the political oomph of who the envoys were meant to
I think for me, the oomph of the envoys came across in the TV show. But what happened there is that they just went the TV easier way of doing this.
Yeah.
They did not really want the politics in there.
Yes.
And I think that is more the point.
Yes,
I don't think you can ask me what do you prefer, because it doesn't really matter.
No, that's my point is that I thought the book has some political bite. It's interesting to have a war where the wealth inequality people won and the old socialists all lost, and they were on the losing side of a war, and then one of those comes back to Earth and is like, no, fuck you guys, rich people, I don't give a shit. You're rich, fuck you. Like, that's the attitude that he has, and nobody else on Earth has that attitude. But because he's an old lefty, he comes into it and is like, he does have that attitude, and it felt more important. I never felt like when he came in the TV show that he actually agreed with the envoys that, oh yeah, everyone should die at 100. There was none of that was in him. It was like, it was some TV backstory writing. The political bite was taken out of
the TV show, some other bits come to it as well. That I think it was not so much that he was totally within the politics of the envoys, but more that he found a family there.
Yes,
and
yes,
I think
that
was more important.
Yes.
And I think that is what we have to see here, that he was not actually like super 100% like totally, this is what I want.
No, he was following the group.
He was finally having people and like...
And I think his sister in those flashbacks, his sister was never convinced, and you're like, oh, right. Yeah. To be honest, in that backstory, I would be the sister.
Sure,
but I know that's weird because
this is why you
I want to, but the point is, what the envoys started fighting for. It's sort of like it felt to me much more cult-like. It felt like in the TV show, the envoys and all that and the Quellis were a cult, very much a cult of personality. And it's one of those things that when the Supreme Leader stands up and now says, actually, the new decree is this, who's with me? And everyone agrees. That is not how it felt very totalitarian.
I'm not defending
I know.
That this is better than the other.
I'm just saying that it felt a bit weird that our main hero was like defending a cult, and the person who disagreed with the cult and wanted to get out of the cult with aims against human, like the cult obviously was, they were terrorists and all that kind of stuff. It felt like weird in the end that the sister became like, you know, she was the villainous one in that situation and he was the hero. And I'm like, I've never seen in the book Takeshi Kovacs as a heroic figure. And in that case, I thought they were trying to present him a bit too much as a hero. And I always think he's an anti-hero. The TV show, he's much more heroic than the book. Let me put it that way.
But still, I think in the book, so many things are written so unclear that this just doesn't come across.
Well, the point is, it's not unclear, it's keeping it vague. It's not unclearly written.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Keeping and it slightly more vague and ambiguous for you to read into the situation how badass it was, and for you to read through the actions and the character of the main character.
And it is
you
so
can tell
tricky.
he's a socialist. You can tell he was fighting, and he can't express that because his side lost in the war.
But still, I mean, in that book, there's so many things that happen, like, and then he goes there and there and here.
I do agree.
It's just way too much.
Yes, I do agree about that, but I'm only talking about the presentation of the backstory.
Exactly, and that was really bad in this book.
I just
and
like
it was clearer in the TV show.
No,
I don't care.
Again,
and it was,
that's what I don't.
This was like,
I like
you know,
I like the slightly more vague. Who were the envoys and what did they get up to and what were they fighting for? And all that. I like it more vague in the book because it means I fill in with the kick-ass. Like, who were the envoys? The envoys were like fucking James Bond. The envoys were Jason Bourne. The envoys were, you know, Black Widow from the you know, the Avengers, you know, what's her name, like that. Someone who can just go in and just with their wits, just with their minds, just go into a situation and go, bow, wow, get themselves out. And it was hinted at in the TV show. But what they really were was a cult of Ewok worshippers who had some weird political ideas and were terrorists. And I just didn't, in the book, I just didn't feel it. Anyway, let's move on from that. Let's move on to one thing that I actually really liked about this is the racism, or not the racism, the race issues that we have. Takeshi Kovacs, who is a Slavic slash... Well,
Japanese.
I think in the book, it's very clearly that he was completely Japanese, but he had, you know, or he was more Japanese. He went by Takeshi more, like, in his previous life. But now he's Kovacs and he's more Slavic. And because he's a Japanese guy who gets put into a white, very, very white Caucasian body in the TV show. It's sort of like very, actually, it's, I think the actor is Swedish.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah. He's RoboCop. Remember the RoboCop remake?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So he's RoboCop in there. And there's a reason why they have, you know, he's like
a big guy.
Fucking, he's as big as RoboCop even without the armor on.
Yeah.
You know, he's a big guy
there. Yeah.
So, yeah, you kind of, I think he's RoboCop. Anyway, Swedish. So anyway, like as tall and as white and as blonde as they come, although maybe not that blonde. But anyway, there's a Japanese person in there, but you see in the TV show that he's actually spent most of his life not in a Japanese body, or a Japanese looking body. I don't even know how to say it. Like, again, this is a TV show. What's his name?
Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah, where is he from?
Sweden.
Yeah, he's from Sweden.
He's as old as you are.
Is he?
Yes.
And he's 36. 38. No, you see? No, I'm 37. Okay, so I was wondering how old. Anyway, so what do you think about the presentation in the TV show of... I know it's weird to say this, but when they switch between the bodies, when it goes from him, like, in the modern day, and he has a flashback into a different actor of a different nationality, of a different, you know, ethnicity, race, however you want to say it, I was immediately convinced. The TV show, there was never a moment when...
You actually asked me a question.
Yeah.
Because you did ask me a question.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about that? Yeah. Like...
This is one of the first notes I made about...
About the TV show.
About the TV show.
Yeah.
That there was hardly any TV show where I enjoyed this... ethnic diversity and sexual diversity
yeah.
as much as I did in this one.
Yeah.
Because it just felt totally right. You had like everything. And the cool thing about this sleeving, cross sleeving and all this kind of stuff was such a perfect opportunity for actors to really act.
Yeah, yeah.
It was heartbreaking. There was this one situation where you had a black woman re-sleeved in a white guy. And the way that was yeah. acted, it was amazing. And then you had this other guy, this bad guy, and he got like also
yeah
he put himself in other
sleeves.
The ability of the actors to in the TV show, it wasn't in the book
yeah.
where Ortega got this body.
Oh yeah, don't need to give that kind of stuff away. But I'm just saying
this was
genius. It's set up in the very opening of the movie. You see someone who's in the Reese leaving clinic. Someone's daughter has died, and the only spare body to put the daughter back into. It's sort of like you said, we're going to get a new body, and it's sort of like this old like 60-year-old, you know, drug addict woman body, and
yeah.
some. You know,
10-year-old girl
or 12-year-old, 7-year-old girl has been put into it, and she's just like doesn't know what to do or what's going on there at all. I quite like that actually. At the start, it really shows up like all of the spare bodies that everybody was putting into were these like broken down bodies. It was like the lowest rent bodies that you could possibly get
yeah.
for this public re-sleeving
yeah.
policy. And then Takeshi Kovacs, who's just in this like massive built, like
yeah.
amazing muscles, amazing health, top of his health
yeah.
Thing. Yeah, so...
But this was a really great opportunity for
yes,
for,
it was
for
really
the
good.
Actors.
Yeah.
And you could really tell...
I just don't want to give away all the moments, because some of those moments
are
so... Yeah,
so good.
When you see this different person and you're suddenly like, oh no, what's going
yeah.
on there?
So first of all, it is the ethnic diversity that jumps out. But also, I think the ratio of badass men and women is just great in the
yeah,
TV show.
It's
just amazing.
And I really like the things that they added into this to
yes.
make those other characters more badass. And it because you can look at the book, and if it was just the book, you would like it put on the television show
mm.
in the same style. Like if they had everything the same except that all the action happened as it would have been in the book, it would be very boring. And actually the book does get a bit tedious with all of the punch, like
yes.
and then he went in here and punched someone, and then he
yes.
went there and shot someone, and then there's
yeah.
another fight here, and then the fight there,
and somebody attacked him.
Yeah, and someone attacked him, and he fought them off here, and then he shot them there. And it's sort of like, how can we make this action more interesting? First, like there's this part in the book where he has this grudge match in this, which I think went on a bit too long. But there's someone, you've got to fight this person, and you know, to sleeve death, whatever, like that.
Mm.
And in the book, it's just him. And in the TV show, it's sort of like, okay, the second main character, like the co-star, is
yeah.
Ortega,
yeah.
who is the woman police officer that he's liaising with.
Yeah. Yes.
And working with, it's sort of like, okay, you've both got to, both of you are in there now,
yeah.
and you've both got to fight, and you're like, you know what, that was a much better scene because of it.
Yes.
Like, and there's a way that they make Ortega slightly more powerful, so she doesn't have the combat stuff wiring in her body,
yeah.
but they get a way that it's kind of plausible that she's an action hero fighting person as well.
Yeah, she's badass in other ways.
And some of the people who are in the book who are just like, there's the so some people in the book he just goes and talks to and then disappears, and they come back into the story later. The TV show has them sticking around for a lot longer and being part
yeah.
of the action.
And being like what I also the themes in the TV show are a bit stronger than they are in the book. Like, they have the theme with the family and, you know, finding people you want to work with. And then Kovac being, like, a lone wolf. And then
yes.
he kind of finds back people. And
yeah.
then it becomes more than just, oh, these are people I just use.
Yeah. In the book, he is using people. And he does get to know a few people. But it's pretty much only Ortega in the
yes.
book where he actually gets to know them. Oh, and Eileen, who is the computer hacker, which is in... She's in both
yeah.
both versions.
But still different in the book.
Yeah, different, very different in the book.
Yes.
However, in the book, it's like the morals or the... It feels a bit less clear in that way. way. Like, he is learning and he is developing as a person. But really, like, he comes in as an envoy badass and leaves as an envoy badass. And he has learned some life lessons along the way. But the TV show is much more of like, okay, you learned these lessons in the past. Like, your father beat you. You killed your father because he killed your mother. You know, that kind of stuff is much clearer.
More heavy-handed.
Yeah, it's much clearer in the TV show.
Yes.
And then it seems to be very much about him finding his family. Whereas he thought his family were the Quellists and the envoys that he's training with.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, what about my sister? Is she my family? Your sister doesn't exist in the book at all.
Yeah.
Is it these people who I'm putting around me? But he has to kind of put off his Quellist past, because Quellquist, or whatever her name was, she was always saying, this is in the TV show, he was saying, the people who you bring around you are expendable.
Yes.
The mission is not expendable. You're not expendable. These other people are.
Yeah.
So as he comes into this situation, he's like, oh yeah, all these people are expendable. And he's having to kind of go, actually, the Quellists were wrong about this. These people have to become more of a family. And it's all much more about family and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot better payoffs. And in the TV show, in the book, it's just Kovac and he does all the action and literally does it all. You know, he double sleeves, which is a mild spoiler, but not too much of a spoiler because you know it's going to happen. As soon as they say at the start of the book, oh no, nobody's allowed to double sleeve. You're not allowed to have your mind in two bodies at the same time. It is like, I wonder what's going to happen before the end of the book. And it does happen.
Not only the bad guys do it.
Yeah, not only the bad guys do it. But in that one, it's just all him. And in the TV show, it's sort of like, it's a whole team effort. It's much more of a team effort.
And that was certainly what I enjoyed definitely more than in the book.
And also, because of that, it allowed more, like the TV show has a much higher body count and you see a lot more of it. In a way, because there's more people involved, you go, oh, what about this person? Are they going to die? There's extra police people that you follow. Are they going to survive? There's family members. Are they going to survive? There's other people brought in and you're like, it's a lot more of like, there's a lot more at stake. It's just, will he solve the problem?
Yes.
It's also, will he solve the problem? And like, how many of his team can he connect with
and
keep alive?
Like, it's as in other TV shows where you have a character on the edge of to the bad guys that, like, you know, the bad guys don't like them.
Yeah.
And what they do is they then attack the next to him, like people he likes and their family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think there were some heartbreaking scenes in the TV show.
Yeah,
and
it was pretty heavy. Pretty heavy.
Very emotional.
Let me go through some of my... Come on.
Also, what I wanted to say about the ratio of women and men is that I really enjoyed how they... in the TV show, especially how they, that is a little bit in the book as well, but not quite as much. How they showed strong women, but also weak men.
Yeah.
And that happens not so often.
Yes, that is true.
And there was this one scene in the book, and I actually, in the book, Irene was actually a woman.
Yeah.
She wasn't quite like there. There was some different like levels, but that one scene
in the TV show takes more advantage of what it would look like to be cross-sleeved, what it would look like to have a young person in an old person's body, an old person in a young person's body.
Yes.
Like you meet these people and go, they look about 22, and it's sort of like, oh no, they're 250.
Yes.
And other people you would meet and they go, well, that looks like a 70-year-old. Oh, it's a 15-year-old, or whatever
that. And also, so what comes along with this? You have this ethnic diversity. You have the strong sexual diversity, and also you have a really good balance between you have some straight stuff going on, and then you also have quite a few gay encounters, it's just part of it. It's not even talked about. It's just like, okay, we see this there, this is there. Okay, well,
this is what I want to say. It's so weird. Like, this is the difference between we've been reading these books and they've been different gender pronouns and all that kind of stuff. This is feels like a real rich vein of what gender pronouns would you use for someone who was born physically a woman but is now sleeved in a male's sleeve, you know. What about racial things? Like, that's what I was saying before. It's sort of like, what race is Takeshi Kovacs? Well, now he's a white guy, now he's Japanese, now he's, you know, Polish, now he's Swedish, whatever.
Like, this comes down a bit to like the soul of the thing, you know, what you define yourself as,
now,
right?
Yeah, let me bring in that in stuff. So I already gave it away a little bit at the end of in both the TV show and the movie. He double sleeves himself. He needs to be seen to be going somewhere, but then also going somewhere else. And in the book, he just gets a cool combat sleeve. He gets another sleeve from somewhere.
It's a different body.
Body like that. In the TV show, I thought I knew it was going to go, because what they do at some point, they're like, hey, check out this combat model. It's styled after some of the DNA that we found of one of the old envoys. So this is sort of like, this is like the old envoy model. And it was his body, like it was his DNA. He looked down at himself in the fighting arena. It's like, check out this body.
Yes.
This is what we've got. This is one of the latest models that we've got. You know, that model is mentioned in the book, but it's just sort of like a combat sleeve. It's more artificial.
It's not his original body.
In the TV show, it's him when he was younger. It's flashback to Takeshi. It's, you know, Tact rather than Kovac. Yeah. And I was like, great. At the end, we got all this flashback stuff, and then we got the modern stuff. And at the end, when he double sleeves, they're both going to be here. And then in the TV show, they don't. They actually do a forced clone of him.
The bad guy kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just disappears.
You mean the other version of him? He leaves at that point. Or what are you talking about? The bad guy.
I just don't know how clear I can talk now.
No, I'm just saying.
Is this now a spoiler?
Don't worry about it. But what I'm saying is, it seemed to be setting up an ending where old Takeshi gets it. Like Takeshi gets his body back.
And
they're both going to be next to each other.
Yes.
But they don't. They take it in a different way. It's just the same actor playing both parts.
Yes.
And which is good, because I also like a bit more of that when they do there's this great way of they decide which one is going to do something. You know, let's make a decision, and they do paper, rock, scissors. Now, in the book, that's kind of explored a bit of like, oh, what? Because they're already different. Because they're in different bodies, their biology is different, and the reactions to the people around them and their sex drive is different and that kind of stuff. In the TV show, it's sort of like, oh, no, you're both the same person. So they start playing paper, rock, scissors, and it goes on so long that you don't actually get to see who it is. You don't actually get to see the end of it, because the idea is like, oh, no, they have the same thought processes.
I think this was so much better done in the TV show than in the book.
Yeah.
And also,
It's more visual.
I thought that, you know, that arena when they went to it, first of all, I found it genius that an AI runs a battle place where people can punch.
Well, the hotel is a fun character.
It's another thing that I want to say.
Okay.
They go into this arena and then they walk through it, and then we see the actor of Takeshi Kovac before.
Yeah, the young, flashback actor.
And I thought, oh, that's great. And I thought exactly what's going to happen. And then the actor's going to change, and then the original, like the actor plays as if he would be back in his body. And stuff.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. It was kind of like the bad guy got himself into that body, and then
He didn't. He never. He was not really used.
We saw him once, and it was amazing to see. I could see the bad guy in that body.
Yeah, exactly. The acting. That's a great thing.
It was great.
And what I find really intriguing. Again, this is not
a
spoiler.
Of course, it disappears. Like, the body just disappears.
Yeah, it disappears. And that was the disappointing thing. Yeah. I thought, oh, this is going to be... But it felt like they put that in there for, oh, later, if we need to have that same actor that we all know as Takeshi Kovac, if he turns up in the modern world, that will explain how he has his original body back, because they did find traces of his DNA, which does actually make sense, because he did, you know, they did find, like, they had his body on file or something like that. Another thing that is different, again... I'm not just bringing up the differences between the book and all the differences between the book and the TV show. I'm exploring these differences and why I enjoy, like what I like, what this the questions that brings up here. In the book, if you're a Catholic, you kind of sign a document and you say, my stack can't be reanimated after I die, and it's based around, you know, you signing a document and saying, yes, I've converted to be a Catholic.
Yes.
In the TV show, they actually code the sleeve. It's sort of like it's encrypted. It's like the religious your religious belief. You say yes, encode my thing. So it's impossible. It's impossible to reanimate somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some codes, but it feels very much like an encryption thing rather than just a legal document. It's sort of like a computer encryption.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think more in the TV show. And also the idea that the stack is sort of like, wow, this is magical technology that you can download your brain into a small thing that you can take out the back of your neck. In the book, it feels a bit too advanced for the rest of the technology. Mm. Whereas in the TV show, they said, oh, yeah, there was the Martians and aliens. Well, not Martians, but we found some alien remains on Mars, and we kind of back solved their technology and we created these sleeves and it's sort of like this little bit of alien technology in all of us. And I'm like, oh, right, okay.
That explains
it. It kind of makes it a bit more sense. So,
yes.
But so I only have one more comment, which is a non-spoiler comment. At the end of the TV show, do you remember the scene where they say, look at this angel wing? This angel wing is actually part of the... It is actually one of the Martians. It's actually one of the aliens. Do you remember? Right at the end, sort of like the third to last scene where they were up in the Bancroft residence and they say, look at this thing, this fossil. It's a fossilized alien.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of like wing, like this bat wing, angel wing thing.
Yeah.
That's setting up for season two because the second book is kind of more of a space adventure where they discover like an alien, a big dumb object, you know. So there's like a, I think it's a broken alien spaceship, and they've got to get into it. And it's more about, you know, finding more of this leftover technology that they was originally found on Mars. These, you know, these song spires, these leftover alien technology.
Yeah, these trees that sing.
Yeah, and it seems a bit weird that it was all mentioned, and then in the like right in the very like the last quarter of the last episode, they're like, oh, look at this fossilized alien, and then they're like, and moving on. I was like, that's setting up for season two. It's always funny to see these little television tricks that they play.
Yeah.
You know, I remember watching the Lost, and it's about people who have crashed in a plane on a island in the Pacific. And you see everyone on this plane, and each one of them gets a flashback story, you know, all the main cast does.
Of course.
And then one of the main characters gets a flashback in the first in the last episode, and he meets someone in the airport, and he's like, hey, who are you? And she's like, oh, I'm down at the back of the plane. And she shows the ticket. She's down on, you know, row 48F or whatever it is, and he's up in the front. And I was just like, oh, so season two, so they can keep doing flashbacks and have new cast members. The back of the plane landed on the other side of the island, and they survived, and that we're going to get a whole new cast. I never watched season two of Lost. Apparently that is what happened. They just go, oh, there's other people survived on all the other side. But you have to introduce that in the last episode of the first season. Mm. So there's a little bridge. If they suddenly turn, if it would be like episode one of season two, suddenly, oh, and there's people who survived from the back of the plane. If you just like, oh, that's convenient, like
that.
Yeah. So I saw a few of these little things like put into that last episode.
Okay.
One, we're going to find Quellchrist or the Quellist movement, going to find them again, and also this alien technology.
Yeah,
watch out, season two.
Yeah. Okay, so you know that because you've read the other
I've read
books.
The books.
How many other books are there?
There's two more books.
Okay.
And weirdly, very different tone. This book is you know, the book is like a noir detective kind of adventure. Mm. The second book, I think it's called Fallen Angels or something. It's a space adventure, sort of like, hey, we're space marines and we're going here and we're exploring the spaceship.
Okay.
And then the third one is much more kind of political action fighting back on Harlan's world.
Okay.
And it's mentioned in the book that Harlan's world has got this alien technology around it that nobody, you can't fly anywhere.
Yeah.
So if you take off on a plane which is bigger than a helicopter and go too high, it immediately gets zapped by these space lasers.
Yeah.
Space lasers. And they say, oh, there is a few times when you can fly when there's a bit of a gap and the alien space lasers that are left over aren't there anymore. Mm. But, you know, they manage to get on and off the planet by transmitting their brains. But that's Harlan's world. Everything is low down and nobody flies anywhere.
Yeah.
And the third book is set there. So it's all set up in this, you know, in these different, in these different setups. But, so
that's good.
That's a trigger. So those are all my notes. Have you got anything else you
I
want to say?
I have a few more things.
Okay.
First of all, I was impressed. I mainly did notes about the TV series,
yeah,
so don't mind that.
We've gotten all this way with no hardly any spoilers as well, so let's just wrap it up without doing any more spoilers.
I don't do spoilers.
Of course not.
There were many, many naked people.
Oh, yeah, lots of naked people.
Naked people, like you could see penises and stuff.
Lots of penises, lots of boobs.
I was impressed, and I thought it was done in a very...
No, definitely more boobs than penises.
Well, yes, and
but it is quite
pubic hair. Oh,
yeah.
You can see like lots of styles of pubic hairstyle and stuff.
Yeah,
it's interesting as well. What
this is the reaction that
for?
I've heard from lots of times. Oh, the book is just full of sex, and I'm like, first of all, it's about sex workers and brothels and all that kind of stuff.
The problem is it starts off quite sex heavy.
Yes, it does.
I mean, it's like,
but there are
the
only...
first thing is he wants to fall asleep after he got re-sleeved. The first thing he's thinking, oh, I wanted to masturbate and then I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Great.
But the point is, it's about living another... people complain about sort of like, oh, it's about this and about horniness and about sex and stuff. But
he thinks about his penis a lot.
He does. But the point is, if this is a story about you going into somebody else's body, like if you were put into a man's body, what is literally the first thing you would do if you were put into a man's body? Okay, Julianne is pulling a funny face. In other words, I win that point. I win. If I was put into
a penis,
yeah, of course you'd be like, you'd be like, oh shit,
flip it around, shake it around. Yeah, you'd be, that's funny.
Yeah, be like,
but that would be it. It's just like the boobs, they're just hanging, they're attached again, to heavy stuff.
Anyway. Richard Morgan has written on about his other books. People say you're always talking about sex. He's like, when I was a young man, sex was the driving force of my personality and all of my social life.
See, that's the dangerous things about men.
Well, it's true. Like, and he wrote something like that. When I was at university, every single night I went out, it was to drink and mostly to have sex. And every time that you went away somewhere without kissing and having sex with someone, or, you know, getting in that way, that was what the entire night was structured about. And I can see that in my own history. Not to the same extent, but I see it. And you're saying, you often ask me, like, when was the last time you thought of sex? And it's always sort of like, yeah, like about 8 minutes ago or something. And you're like, oh, I've not thought of sex for the last day and a half or something.
There was a stretch in my life where I hadn't had sex, didn't think about sex for 6 years. And I didn't suffer. I don't know. I'm alive and it's perfect and fine without...
I don't think I've been more than 6 hours in my life since I was 16, 17 years old without thinking of sex or my penis or in something like that way.
That's just crazy.
I know it's crazy, but that's just it. What the book is about, people complain that there's too much nudity or the book's got all about sex. It's like, yeah, but that's what the book is.
Even though there's
two sex scenes in the whole book, but it is about that.
There are two things in the book that I made a note and highlight of. And there's one thing that fits right now, and I think that is like a very important statement, and I think that should be true.
What's that?
It's who says this? It's
have you ever been 7 months pregnant? 7 months.
Yeah, that's Irene saying.
Yeah.
Have you ever been 7 months pregnant? I shook my head. No. That's too bad. It's an experience we should all be required to go through at least once. And I think in this world, it could actually be possible.
Yeah, it feels like the culture in that way.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you have education in this world, how would it go? It would go that every stack has to go in a female body, in a male body, in a black body, in an Asian body, to just experience and all that we are not able to experience.
Yeah.
You know?
It is explained, though, in the TV show, more than the book, that by swapping around between different sleeves, it does make you a bit crazy.
Yeah, it does.
By doing that, that's what, you know, the patchwork man is a bit like that, you know. He's had so many different things, he doesn't know who he is anymore.
Yes.
In the book, I think the patchwork man, even though I like it, is one of the weakest parts and all that kind of stuff. I wish they'd have just cut that out and got to the chase.
They were one of the confusing bad parts. There's more. Hotel.
We've been going 1 hour now.
Yes, I know, but it's good.
Yeah, okay. Let's go through some of the more world building a bit. You said here the hotel in the book. It's the Hendrix.
And it appears as a person with a guitar in his hand.
But only inside the virtuality.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's a faceless hotel running customer service routines.
Yes.
And it's not got very much personality until you actually find it. It's like, oh, it does have a personality.
Yes.
Of course, they looked at it in the TV show and like, all right, let's have that personality.
Let's make something of that.
Yeah.
And I think that was very well done. And I think the choices they made to make it into a different character were really great.
Apparently not a choice. The estate of Jimi Hendrix wouldn't allow him to be literally a murderous, insane AI in the book, which I understand. And also, Poe, you can get anyone to play Poe.
And it's great. I did the podcast with Jesse about The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. And it's just great. It fits so well.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
But that's the thing with the TV show. They can go, what are all the great ideas in the book which weren't really paid off in the book? Let's
How
do that
How can we
better.
Enhance them?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think the idea that you can not have only positive things about the sleeving and, of course, the bad things about being cross-sleeved and stuff, but also what they can do to you is they can torture you and kill the sleeve where you're in and then take your stack out and just...
Yeah.
Do that again.
That's what they do in the virtuality. It's sort of like, we can kill you as many times as we need to.
But I think in the book it was that, he also was in a different body at some point.
Yes, yeah.
You know, when...
No, in the virtuality, he was put into a woman's body so they could torture him and rape him.
And that was quite, more than grim, that scene.
Yes, it is pretty grim.
I mean, it is
But to be honest... The TV show, some of the times in the book where he just goes, oh yeah, and I just went around killing everyone, and you're like, okay, that's an interesting statement to make. Yes. Whereas in the TV show, you actually see it over and over again, and you're like, oh, this is actually pretty bad.
Yeah, it is. Like, I think I counted at some point in every episode there is violence.
Oh yes.
In every one of them.
Well, they need it. They can't do an episode which doesn't have a good fight.
Which, I mean, you have to be kind of just living with it and be strong about it, but it shows the points a little more. And then one thing in the book, in the book, the police guys are called the Mohicans. And
it's because they all go to the same
hairdresser. They go to the same hairdresser. And this is totally the kind of cyberpunk kind of thing.
Yeah.
That we see in quite a lot of things, and then they have the hairstyle there. So now this is like just some badly researched bit of stuff, because I did it immediately got to me, and I thought, I looked this up.
Yeah.
And it turns out that this is actually only that you only call this hairstyle Mohican.
Yeah.
The Mohicans, the tribes.
They don't call it the tribe. They
don't even have it.
No,
it's other tribes.
That's a very well-known factoid, that the Mohican tribe never wore Mohicans. It's just a hairstyle named
after. The association
after.
Comes from Hollywood, and more specifically from the popular 1939 movie Drums Along the Mohawk starring Henry Fonda.
Yeah, they were like, let's give these guys cool haircuts.
But if you have a story set so far in the future, why would you then take a cult like a thing?
It's not. He's purely talking about the hairstyles. It's just they were hairstyles, and then when all the people who he could have said the beehives, he could have said the crew cuts, he could have said the skinheads. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I just don't like it that it's a word that is used in the wrong way.
No, it's not. They all wore Mohican hairstyles, so he called them Mohicans. If they were skinheads, he would have called them skinheads. If they were long-haired hippies, he would have called them long-haired hippies. It's just using a hairstyle. I don't think there's anything too or insensitive about that.
But that's the whole point. Because it is so, this is just the way they call it. I don't think it is good.
So what do you call the Mohican then?
I would just... I don't know,
it's just
spiky
that.
Stripe. No, but you can find new names.
That's just not how words work. That's just not how writing and words and language works.
Yeah, but this was worn by the Pawnee. It's a different tribe, and the tribes who actually...
Again, sure, but you can't say an Apache helicopter doesn't come from the Wild West. It's built as a war helicopter that shoots missiles. Let's not call it an Apache helicopter anymore. The tomahawks, let's not call them tomahawks. Like, all these different... That's not a tomahawk, that's just an axe.
It shows even worse.
No, it is. Yes, but it's misused, but now that is language, and now that is what that hairstyle is called. There is no other name for that hairstyle. Right, we just talked for 5 minutes about fucking haircut, which has got no bearing on the book at all.
I think, and that didn't, they didn't take that
a few of the policemen did actually have Mohican hairstyles. Yeah, I was looking for it. But it was mostly not the main characters, but a few of the background police characters did have Mohicans. I think that was just a reference to the book, for a little Easter egg for the people who've read the book.
Yeah.
We're going on really long now. We've been over an hour, and I still don't know. You keep saying, let's go for more notes. How many more notes do you have to go through? Because I want to be wrapping up soon.
Okay, one more thing.
One more note. Yeah, okay. If it's three more things, that's great. But I don't know if it's one more thing, two more things, or 15 more things. So how many notes have you got?
No, I'm just not going
to
say
it. I want to know, because I've seen this note. You said the backpack, and I see this note here. Yeah. Go through the notes, but I don't know how many notes you have. That's all I'm asking. I'm not saying I don't want
it. In the TV show, he for some reason, carries around this plastic pink
Hello Unicorn. It's a Hello Kitty bag, but they're not allowed to use Hello Kitty, so it's Hello Unicorn.
But it's it's just so outstanding. Like, it's coming through all, it's in all the scenes, okay, where it just okay. comes and then swings it over his shoulder, this massive guy with his little...
Pink, if it... Here's a question. So do you think that's a good thing, or
it's brilliant.
Oh, you really do? Okay, because I really liked it. And if you went about that and were why is he doing that? It doesn't make any sense. I was like,
it's such
that's perfect.
Little twist, like, twinkle eye... thing,
yeah,
like.
it feels very much like okay, we have this. They do this quite a bit, you know, like what the bag is that people carry around. You kind of need to know that if you see that bag, oh shit, trouble's going to break out.
Also, it's a little bit like, you know, in Indiana Jones when he has the hat. So there's the hat, and it's beyond the thing, and he always
it has to go back for the hat. Yeah.
He always gets, and so there's a little bit with the backpack. So yeah. There's
it's a little bit of a plot, like a plot and TV device and stuff like that.
It's
okay.
It's
next note.
No, that's it.
Really? You have no other notes?
Well, I can...
how many more notes have you got? That's what I'm saying. All I want to know is, are we going to talk for another 15 minutes, or are we going to talk for another 3 minutes?
I think I'm done.
All right, that's good. So that's what I was trying to get to the bottom of. I was like, how much longer is this podcast going to be?
Yeah.
All right, so the only vaguest thing that I want to say, which people have read who've both read the book, and or people who've watched the TV show and read the book... in the book, he has no sister. No spoilers about what happens with the sister. What do you think about the inclusion of the sister in the TV show?
I thought it gave the whole thing a bit more character. It gave it a bit more dimension. Because I think in the book, he was too much of
a solo
person. And I think that kind of just gave it a little extra... I liked it.
Yeah. I liked it in some ways because in the book, the character that she replaces suddenly like turns up like near the end or like three quarters and suddenly like, oh, he's got this whole history with this character.
Yes.
And they've had run-ins in the past and done all this kind of stuff in the past. And it
was
seemed...
it also a woman?
Yeah, it was a woman.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to give away too much of who she replaces
in the
book or anything like that. But the person that she does replace in the book, I was like, oh, that feels really obvious. But then it felt like it didn't... I mean, I enjoyed it, the inclusion in the book, in the TV show, but it did leave the end of the book having a different ending to the TV show in a way which, the TV show had such a different end to the book because it involved the family and the other family and these other family members here and daughters here and sisters there and brothers there. And
they just went a different path. Yeah. But I think it was a deliberate thing.
All I want to say is that I think the very end of the book... The final sequence in the end of the book is a lot shorter. He goes in there, completes the mission, does it, and it wraps it up. In the TV show, because they had to spread that out pretty much over an episode and a half, they had to keep finding more things to do and more situations and more danger and more action and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of wished it just wrapped up a bit quicker.
Really?
Yeah. I
thought it was really well... I think...
I think the pacing in that last episode, because they had to keep... Oh, now we're going to wrap this thing up and wrap that thing up. And in the book, it was all, like, wrapped up a lot quicker.
I thought it was nicer that the way that he, like, he faced the different people with the different things. I think that came across
But some of his moments that he was just did in passing, they're like, oh, well, let's give this moment that he did in passing to this other character. Like, you know, and then, oh, to this other character. Oh, and this other character's there. And they have to have an... He had to keep switching around between the different characters.
Okay, there was this one diversion... With the lawyer thing,
yeah,
I think that was not necessary.
Yeah, because they had actually engineered more things into the story.
Yes.
For most of the TV show, I was well behind it. You know, the inclusion of the families, the inclusion of these other characters. The lawyer was a bigger character.
Yeah.
The computer hacker and her husband were bigger, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the hotel had a lot more to do, and Ortega had a lot more to do,
and the daughter.
And in the book, they kind of like, because there wasn't all those different things that they had to wrap up into it was like, oh great, he could just finish the story, pay it off, and that's okay. Whereas the TV show, they're like, oh, and now we've got to finish off this one, and this person has to have a heroic moment, and this person has to have a heroic moment, and this new villain has to die in an interesting way, and this one has to, and they've got to do it this way.
Yes.
And I found it just took a bit too long to get through to the climax in the TV show.
I must say, though, that in the book, because it had pacing issues in the middle, that pacing, that wrapping up at the end was like, whoop, and it's like, oh, what? Now it's over? No, that was quick.
All I'm saying
is... In the TV show, of course, it stretched a little bit, and it was a little cramped, but overall, it was a bit more even, I think.
Yeah, the pacing in the TV show is better, and it's just shorter as well.
Yes.
In the book, I think they could have cut, you know, like, of the audiobook, I think this is like a 17-hour audiobook or 15-hour audiobook. They could have cut out 2 hours of him running around Bay City and getting up to, you know, whatever stuff there.
Yeah.
And because in these investigation stories, there's always like, oh, we think they've solved it. Oh, no, they haven't solved it. Yeah. Oh, no, they really solved it. And it's the standard thing. And just the bit between, oh, I think I've solved it. Oh, no, I haven't solved it.
Yes.
He actually, in that moment, actually solves it. But then there's loads of more stuff that he has to do before he does the final big reveal at the end where, you know, everyone gets together in a room and everyone explains what's going on. Like that. They do that more in the TV show.
Agatha Christie kind of moment.
And in the TV show, they did the Agatha Christie moment, like the bit between the I've solved it, oh no, I haven't solved it, to the oh no, I've really solved it. In the TV show, was compressed. In the book, it felt too spread out. You're like, oh no, this is not the time when you have to be running around and doing lots more things.
Yeah.
If you've literally already solved it, and he does the envoy intuition and puts it all together in his head, and we see all that kind of stuff, at that moment, you need to be setting up the final scene. And in the book, they're like, right, let's spend another 45 minutes of him going here and getting to fight there and
There was 100 pages where it just like didn't move.
Yeah, it didn't move. And in the because that was spread out, actually quite a few of those scenes which were in that section, they actually just moved to different parts of the TV story in the story story of the TV show. Yeah, and then they get to the end. But like I say, a lot of that stuff which was being paid off throughout the book was then all crammed. The last episode felt too long to get to the end of the action, but also too full of stuff that had to happen.
Yes.
If you know what I mean. It's sort of like, oh, and this other innocent person has to die to make this person feel bad. Oh, and this other person has to have something good happen to them and bad happen to them. So when it pays off, it's like, you know, it just felt a little bit too much. So that's all I wanted to say, you know, just generally that I do have issues just with the very, like, the final sequences in the TV show, or, the final action and confrontation and resolution in the TV show.
Yeah.
Some of the actual story ideas, like in the book, the guy's son isn't so much of a factor, but here they're like, oh, we need to make the family aspect more important, so his son is more important
is more
in the TV show.
The driver in the book?
They kind of switch some people around, they switch some roles around. Yeah. There isn't a driver in the TV show, but what the driver does is partially put onto the lawyer, partially put onto the son, partially put onto the wife. It's spread around a bit more. Yeah. So there is some different balancing acts of what the story is about and how it pays off and where the pacing issues are. I'm just saying, if you get to... but again, you hadn't read the book before you watched the final episodes.
Yeah.
So you didn't realise that I was expecting, oh, he goes in there, this happens, and presumably that's why I was always just waiting. Oh, look, we already know what the thing is. Let's just get to it.
Of course.
Whereas if you're just watching the TV show, it's like, oh, right, that person has to do something. So I think it's just a thing of reading the book first
knowledge.
And then watching the show.
Yeah, knowing what is going to happen. I didn't know, so for me, it felt a little bit more natural.
Yeah. Whereas in the book, that's such a, not a short sequence, but compressed sequence.
Yeah. Because
it's all against the clock. Mm. And they do it by the, you know, in the book, that he gets it by the end of the clock. Whereas in the TV show, it's all against the clock. And then, oh, they've got a few hours to hang out and pick some people up here and deliver these things here and do stuff. Anyway, so I think that's it. Altered Carbon for the book. What rating would you give the book?
So I gave it on Goodreads. I gave it kind of like 3.5 stars, and you can't give it 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like a combination of the TV show and the book.
Okay.
So the TV show was
This rating isn't going to show up on the data I'm just going to call this Altered Carbon.
Yeah.
So
maybe 3.75.
3.75.
For me.
Yeah, for the book. Yeah, I'd give the book... For me, it does have that pacing issues, but except for the pacing issues and the, like, interminable fight sequences which go on and on, you're just like, let's go to...
the book.
Talking about, for you as the 3 stars. For me, it's a 4 stars. And it is, I think, one of those important books because it's actually good cyberpunk. It's cyberpunk which is influential. It shows its influences, but it's also influential. And it's got some... It's an interesting exploration of these ideas. Weirdly, though, like I say... The TV show is kind of like almost a better realized exploration of the ideas in the book if the story isn't quite as strong and it's an exploration of family and stuff, and none of that's in the book at all.
Yeah.
So it's weird that because the book is good, they could make a really, really good TV show out of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's really solid source material for the TV show.
Sometimes it felt like this was already a script. Like, sometimes it had this, like, up in the clouds, this and this and this.
Yeah.
And then in his head, and then like, especially the scene that is not in the book where they take him to Europe and then he goes through all the brothels and then, like, it takes drugs and stuff.
I don't remember. That's in the book.
Only in the book. And then the way that it was written looks very much like... Yeah. This happens here.
Okay,
like,
we're wrapping up.
Would have it in a script.
Yeah. So
it was. I think it is one of those books that is more. It's.
Oh, okay.
Why did you do that?
No, no.
It's an easy source.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's a great source, and you can see that Richard Morgan, as the story consultant or as a consultant on the TV show, makes a lot of sense. He's obviously got some interesting ideas there.
That's
so
true.
I would say watch the TV show because then you don't really have to read the book. Because
reading the book, it's a different experience.
Yes, it is. I think the book is much more about the ideas and much more about the politics and a lot more. Like, I just think, like, the politics are clearer in the book, and I do think it's a very political book, and that the politics are watered down so much in the TV show because they don't want to. They don't want the TV show to be literally eat the rich and we have to kill off the previous generation for the new generation to get power and all that kind of stuff, which is all of that's much more in the book. So I rated this book 4 stars
I got this recommended by Jesse from SFF Audio last year, I think.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, here, you should...
I've recommended this book to you a few times.
I don't remember that.
Oh, really?
No.
I have. Anyway, so we've been going about 1 hour and 20 minutes. Anything, any last thoughts? Anything else you want to say?
Should I read other books?
I would suggest... The thing is, I've actually just read that not so many people watch this, and the critics didn't enjoy this TV series so much.
Really?
Yeah, which is weird, because I think it's really good. Again... Slight issues and pacing issues aside, but the thing is, it cost a lot of money. And apparently, and I mentioned this to you before, apparently, like, the Ozark TV show is really cheap because you just get, like, 5 actors and a camera to run around the woods in Kentucky or wherever the Ozarks is. Maybe not Kentucky. But where are we in the whatever? It's sort of hillbilly country, but not hillbilly country or whatever. So that's really cheap, and some of these other TV shows are actually really cheap. Whereas this, it's sort of like almost every shot has got special effects in it. Like, it's, you know, all these sets. What I love about when they go into the VR, like, every single time when they go into virtual reality, it starts off with this, like, 360 degree lens, you know, like when you see the when you see the VR headsets. So it's sort of like, oh, now people know what VR video looks like. It's this warped thing where you actually see all of it, and you have to have the special YouTube plugin to look around, or you put it on your phone and swing it around. People already know what that footage looks like, so when they go into VR, they first show that, and then they show it, like, more, like, point of view kind of thing, but they always put their warping around the edge.
Exactly.
So all of these really clever technical things. Oh, another thing I wanted to mention about the world building is I just want to say it's a post-mobile phone TV show, and it's very few times where you see TV shows or movies which exist in the modern world, are modern creations, which acknowledge that cell phones are a thing, and in the future... Interpersonal communication is going to be easy and simple, but nobody is carrying around a mobile phone. You just see a glint in their eye, and that means they're connecting.
Focusing on something
a bit closer. They just kind of look off to the left hand side, and I really like that. I very, very, very rarely see what modern technology that we have now, like, what's that going to look like in the future, which isn't just a thinner phone. You know, all of these different things you see someone pick up, and they always make it transparent, or it's projecting something somewhere, and they're lifting up. In the Star Trek Discovery, and all those different kind of things. Mm. They always pick it up, and it's like see-through. It's like, nobody wants a see-through phone, because you don't want other people in the room to just see what you're looking at. Yes. But in reverse, it makes no sense at all.
Mm.
Whereas putting it into the eye, you're like, yes, that's, you know, they're not wearing goggles, they're not wearing stuff, they're just the white of their eye just flashes white, and you can see them look, and they're like, oh, that's all I need.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing is really great. So, yeah, but I'm just saying that there's a lot of money in this. So if they're going to renew, or if they're going to have a season 2...
So you say I should rather watch the TV show than read the
book. I'm just saying the second TV show, the second season of Altered Carbon might not be coming anytime soon, because it's very expensive. Or they can maybe they'll just say, well, it's a bit expensive to have it in a cyberpunk city where everything's like that. Maybe they're just going to do it as everyone's running around in a forest, like they did with the Quellis. You know, they could just be like, oh, okay, let's just film the whole thing. This whole adventure, this whole season takes place in an abandoned warehouse in a forest.
So you're saying they will take more a diverted path from the original source material? They're not going with the same books like they have?
Maybe. I'm just saying the second book is a big epic space adventure.
Okay.
And that might be a little bit too expensive to have a 10-episode series of space adventure with a new actor, because they're not going to use the same actor.
Yeah.
But they can use any actor that they want now.
Yes, yeah, of course.
They can put him in a woman, they can put him in a...
Should I read the book? That's my question to you.
Yes.
Okay.
You should either read the book or watch the TV show.
Okay, good.
But if you're going to watch the TV show, you'll be waiting a few years.
I get it, but I wasn't asking about TV show.
I thought you were asking, should I read the book or watch the second season?
No, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I'm literally just asking,
if you want to,
I
would totally read the second book. I've not read them since I started the SFBIP, which is over 10 years now. So yeah, we could carry on with this series if you can put up with the penises and sex.
It's more like that.
Just saying.
Now, guys.
No, actually, there's actually some really interesting lesbian couples scenes with body swapping and stuff. There's some good stuff.
Okay.
I'm not saying sexy interesting. I'm saying like interesting exploration. Stuff like that. All right, that's it. 4 stars for me. 3 stars.
3.75.
3.7 stars for Juliana for the book, the TV show. I don't give stars, but thumbs up. Go for it. And that's it. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.